all of you as deputies and clergymen you checked in this morning should have received a copy of the report in your packet at registration. I'm not going to read that to you. You're more than capable. Hope you've had some opportunity to review it. But I do want to address the question that may have been echoing in several people's minds when you saw that we were going to take up the question of marriage. Your action might have been something like, good Lord, do we have to? Do we have to deal with this? Do we have to go there? What I want to speak to just briefly this morning is why this is necessary, why we have a task force here. I want to thank my fellow task force members who helped prepare this report. That would be the Reverend Canon Kendall Harmon, Peter Moore, and Ted Duvall, who are currently the other members of this task force. Why this report? Well, it's a function of looking around at the culture in which we live and dealing with the reality of what lies before us. We'll talk first about what it means for those individuals in business who have tried to act on their conscience. The photograph you see up here on the screen is from the front entrance of Arlene's Flowers in Richland, Washington. The owner of that establishment, Baron L. Stutzman, has been in business there for over 20 years, serving that community and providing flowers for all kinds of various and sundry occasions. Customers that she's had there for many, many years. And this particular instance, one who had been a customer for over 10 years, when she declined to do flowers for that individual's wedding to someone of the same gender, reported her to the State Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The upshot is that she has been in court for years now, defending her right to decline to do that particular piece of business on the basis of conscience, her sense that marriage should be between one man and one woman. And the courts now have ruled against her. She is liable for the loss not only of her business, but of her home as well. It's been implicated in all of this. And it's a reminder that the refusal to cooperate, if you will, for lack of a more precise term, with the cultural agenda of changing the definition of marriage is a perilous thing if you're an individual in business. We could name lots of others out there who've had similar experiences, and if you follow these sorts of issues on the internet, you know that they're wedding photographers, cake bakers, t-shirt printers, bed and breakfasts, all kinds of businesses that have been subject to legal assault for these matters. You might also be aware that the Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran lost his position over this issue. All of these increasingly finding it difficult to act on a traditional understanding of marriage and sexuality. It's being legally challenged in all these cases. But what we need to understand, it's not just the business world that's having this experience. Bring up my next slide, please. The photograph you see in front of you is of the Ocean Grove Camp Meeting Association in the state of New Jersey. It was founded over 100 years ago by a group of Methodists who were looking to establish an operation, a ministry, very much like what we think about our Camp St. Christopher being in terms of what it does and what it exists to be in that place. It is a church-affiliated conference center, and it was challenged in court by the state of New Jersey's Division of Civil Rights when they refused to be a host site for same-sex weddings. They had been made themselves available with some frequency for the conduct of weddings, a seaside property with pavilions and other areas amenable to that. Challenged when they refused for clear religious doctrinal reasons not to do so. It's not hard to understand the nature of the institution. You can't miss the cross on the main conference center building there. The nature of the establishment is not in any way unclear in this case. It is a ministry. Nonetheless, they ultimately lost their state tax-exempt status, because of this conflict with the state of New Jersey. And they had to cease making that seaside facility available for any weddings beginning in 2012. Even though a religious establishment, a place used for religious worship by religious organizations, they were not exempt from that requirement. The issue was not lack of facilities or services to render that same service elsewhere on the beach. It was the desire to compel. Similarly, Catholic adoption agencies in Illinois, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., California, multiple Christian schools of various denominational affiliations have all been challenged for their application of their Christian beliefs to the practice of their ministries. Ministry is not in itself inherently an exception to the expectations of the law in this area. Even churches and their leaders are now beginning to feel this pressure. Some of you may or may not have seen this on the internet. You'll be familiar perhaps though with the story of what's been going on in Houston, Texas. That's gotten national attention and lots of media outlets. Five local pastors were served with subpoenas demanding 17 categories of information, including copies of their sermons and all personal communications that had to do with their challenge to the legitimacy of a Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. They gathered 50,000 signatures to petition the city to put the issue, the question of this ordinance, on the ballot. That was three times the number required by city ordinance. But the city attorney threw out those petitions, alleging that there were not enough legitimate signatures there, and the conflict has reached a place where, at least as of today, the subpoenas against these five pastors have been withdrawn. But the fight there still continues. In a similar fashion, it's worth noting that in Lake Worth, Florida, the requirement has been established by the city there that city business licenses will be required of all churches in order to operate. Think about that for a minute. The city government's requiring churches to register as a business, to be licensed as a business, with all that comes with that. With both the law and the attitude of the culture changing so rapidly, we need to recognize that we are doing ministry in a different world. We are naive if we believe that this will not affect us in some fashion. We don't want to be alarmist about all this, but we cannot live in denial either. These events, though not yet normal in the sense that it's what's happening to everybody everywhere, are in the same way no longer rare exceptions either. This is going to affect us all wherever we live and serve. This puts us in an uncomfortable place. We're not generally accustomed to being confessional about anything that we do in the Anglican tradition. It's been something of a two-edged sword for us, arguably. For many generations, it's made possible a breadth to Anglicanism, but also arguably made possible its collapse in the current generation, where we became so broad that there was no consensus left about anything that was essential. The reality is that these changes no longer allow us the luxury of being vague, private, or ambivalent on these issues of faith. Historically, it's been possible regarding marriage for us to be accustomed to a broad cultural consensus that agreed with and supported our understanding of what marriage should be. Now the culture is not simply disagreeing with our assumptions. In a few places, it is strongly challenging those assumptions. That is what we need to recognize. We no longer presume a broad consensus that requires little articulation on our part. We need that articulation first for ourselves. We need to know what it is that we believe, what we do, and why we do it. A fellow priest was sharing with me this morning the concern he had about a member of his staff who had planned to take a vacation with a member of the opposite sex and didn't recognize that there might be something wrong with sharing a room with that person while they're on this extended vacation together. The sort of boundaries about appropriate behavior that we take for granted aren't taken for granted even among our own, sometimes even of our leadership. We need to be much more clear about what we believe, where we stand, and how that applies to our lives and how we do ministry. The only way that we'll be able to stand, because it's likely to cost us something, is to be united in these matters. We also need this articulation for the understanding of our culture, to be able to interact with it effectively, to be able to communicate to the culture around us that doesn't have the same presumptions that we do, but needs to hear the message that we have to share. The light of the truth still needs to be shed abroad. We all need to be able to articulate, as the opportunity arises, what we believe and why we believe it. The conclusion is a first and provisional step. Let me underline that. What we would deal with today is provisional in character. The task force report that you have before you has three resolutions. The first asks the standing committee, task it to adopt the necessary policies for the diocese to begin addressing these issues, and if necessary, to come to convention in the future with canonical changes. Second, it tasks the committee, the Marriage Task Force Committee, to continue the work to develop the resources needed to educate ourselves and to communicate to the culture in which we live more effectively. And finally, it recommends an initial standing resolution of this convention to attempt to concisely articulate what it is that we believe about marriage, not just as a matter of policy, but fundamentally as a matter of faith, because that is what it is, a matter of faith, and how it must be articulated if we wish to maintain the freedom to practice our faith as we have received it. Again, this is provisional, but still an important first step in preparing to be a more effective witness to a culture that in many areas will be much more aggressively challenging not only what we say, but what we wish to do. Offer these four resolutions for consideration by the convention on behalf of the task force. Look forward to answering questions when they are brought forward for consideration this afternoon after approval by the resolutions committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Canon Lewis, for your report and your work, and for the task force labors.